Welcome to the BizNews Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg, and this is your podcast, our daily private conversation where we go behind the scenes of the website, check in on BizNews TV, and I share a few thoughts from my world. This is The Inner Circle. It's Tuesday, the 4th of November, 2025. Glad to have you with me. Over the past few months, I've been re-examining my roots in a way, my journalistic roots anyway, going back into the mining sector, which is an area that is part of any young financial journalist's background, or certainly was, not so much anymore, I guess, as the mining sector in South Africa has been in decline for the last 20 years, primarily through very, very poor governance. But it still reminds you that we've got some great people who are running mines in South Africa and some incredible deposits. I spoke this morning with Graham Soda. He's the chief executive of Steenkampskraal. He was minding his own business 3.5 years ago when the late chairman of Steenkampskraal got hold of him and said, come and have a look here. We think that you should actually have one last rodeo. And here it is in this former Anglo-American mine. Now, the one thing I've learned when looking at mines that had been examined and analyzed by Anglo-American in time gone by, and I recall going down the Afrikaner Leases gold mine, which was really a uranium, underground uranium mine in the end, with Neil Froneman many years ago. And Neil was pointing out to me that this was an Anglo mine that they'd closed 50 years before, because the uranium price at the time wasn't high enough, but that their investigations had been meticulous. And he said there wasn't a single thing that he could have given the old timers who did the geology for Anglo back then a negative mark for. And I got the same story today from Graham. He said that when he was taken into the Steenkampskraal mine, it was an original Anglo mine that they closed down in the 60s. And then a bunch of Canadians got terribly excited about it around 2010 when rare earths, remember that, we're going to talk about that in a moment, rare earths started taking off. There was a fight between the Japanese and the Chinese at the time. And as a consequence, they listed the mine but ran out of money after spending tens of millions of dollars in getting it ready, fit for purpose to be producing, because at the time that they were ready or almost ready to produce, the price of rare earths had fallen and it collapsed. So you've got this incredibly rich mine or rich minerals, rare earth minerals, and it has been, first of all, well surveyed by Anglo-American, so you know what's there. Graham says they could expand the life to by another 30 years, the life of mine at the moment is 16, very easily, very comfortably, if they were required to do so. And then on top of that, you've got the Canadians who in 2013 were forced to leave because of bankruptcy, and the mine that wasn't profitable at the time was then bought out by the people who now, generally speaking, are trying to make a go of it. Well, they are making a go of it. It's a 200 million rand credit line that they've been given from the Industrial Development Corporation. They've got all their BEE credentials right. They've got a black chairman who's pretty active. Certainly when you listen to Graham, he refers to his name quite a lot. They've got about 50 people on site now, whereas there were 5 or 6 previously. And they're going for it. They're giving it everything they've got. And why not? Because rare earths are the big story of the moment. China has managed to get a lock hold on rare earths, and the United States doesn't like that because rare earths are used in very important parts of the economic machine, even though they're not apparently not rare. They're called rare earths. They're not rare because you can find them in lots of places. The difficulty is to take the thorium and I think that he said 19 different minerals and to extract them in a economic way. Now, the Chinese have worked this out. Here in South Africa, we've got the natural advantage. It is comfortably, I'm told, the richest rare earths deposits in the world. But by a long way at Steenkamp's Kraal. So it's pretty easy for Graham and the team to actually pull out and to mine the minerals, put them through their very small plant at the moment, and produce pretty much as within the next year or so they are going to be on the market. But the story here is if they can expand it, they could become one of the biggest producers of rare earths in the world, because it's there. It's just sitting under the ground. Sadly, we've got a very short-sighted regulations in South Africa. Our mining regulations here are not supporting entrepreneurs in any way. Steenkamp's Kraal is an exception to the mean. The 200 million that is being invested by the IDC is giving it a lifeline, giving it a chance, but it'll be very small unless or until some international player comes along and, invests the money that is required to take this wonderful deposit into full production. And it's really necessary now, because the products that are coming out of the mine, or the rare earths, are needed for magnets, which are critically important in pretty much in many of the mechanical devices that we have for electric cars, and thorium, which is an alternative to uranium for the nuclear industry. So, and a much safer alternative, apparently. Lots of interesting stuff. It's going to be in the director's cut tomorrow night, and the team's busy on it now, and we'll have it as your Biz News briefing tomorrow evening. So I'm just giving you a little insight into the Steenkamp's Kraal stories. Why did I even look at it? Peter Major's been going on about this for a while, and Pete and I are going to be meeting tomorrow afternoon, as we generally do on a Wednesday, to chew the fat about all things mining related. And this time around, I'll be able to maybe give him a little insight on what the Steenkamp's Kraal story, or how it's developing at the moment. Pretty impressed by what I heard today, and we'll be digging deeper into this. Looks like their time has come, because when you have got America and China fighting over some goodies, and you happen to be the guys with the goodies, well, you're in a good place. And Graham says that he's had lots of approaches from all over the world as well. Companies are now suddenly interested in Steenkamp's Kraal. Good news. Good news there. Not so interested is the investment markets in Palantir at the moment. The company brought out some fabulous financial results last night. They really were strong, way ahead of what was anticipated. The chief executive, Alex Karp, said these are the best financial results ever from any software company in the world. Quite a statement. And with the kind of share price that the stock is trading at, they need to have these kind of numbers, up 70% year on year. It's got a market cap of $450 billion. It's only generating a couple of billion in sales every quarter. So it's got a long, long way to go. But that's the story of exponentiality. And Alex Karp is saying, if you understand exponentiality, you understand why Palantir is a great company. They are embedded in many companies around the world. They have a very interesting sales approach, where their people go and sit in the companies and see what the companies need. This is artificial intelligence engines. And then they help to design and build and give the guys a solution that they want. And as a result, they don't tend to lose clients. That's why I liked Palantir at $8 a share. It's now $191 after going to $210 ahead of the results. It's one of those things that sometimes irrational exuberance can come into the marketplace, and that seems to be happening, or seems to have happened, at Palantir. It's come back a little bit today. It's down nearly 8% on those results. And it tends to happen with us, actually, when Palantir reports. The share price goes up strongly before the numbers come out. The numbers come out and the share price goes back. It's that old story of buy on rumor, sell on fact. Another member of our portfolio that has really been cracking on the pace has been Amazon, primarily because Amazon's done a huge deal with OpenAI. It's going to be producing something like $30 billion worth of product for OpenAI. OpenAI is spending like there's no tomorrow. And that's the story, that if you want to have dominance in a innovative new field, I guess you've got to do the land grab that we heard all about back in the dot-com boom. Let's hope that this isn't an AI collapse boom. But at the moment, things seem to be happening just as those protagonists of this amazing new technology. And it is, we use it at BizNews not to produce, this isn't an AI voice, and we certainly don't write AI stuff for you. But boy, does it help us to research. It's a completely different ball game if you can use the tools in the way that they are designed to be used, rather than saying, take over and do it for me. Anyway, I'll be back again tomorrow. And thanks again for being a member of our BizNews Premium tribe. I look forward to your company again. Cheerio. Incidentally, if you are not a member of BizNews Premium and you've been passed this on, why not join us? It costs all of 120 Rand a month if you subscribe annually. And we suggest you do, because who wants to be hassled every month by a debit order? Go and subscribe annually. Pay the, I think it's 1440 is the amount, and enjoy all the goodies that you get with BizNews Premium, including this podcast.